Hey, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me is our returning champion, Chris McShane, from his West Coast sojourn. Chris, welcome back. I'm sorry you had to miss terrible Mets games. Instead, you were watching great live music and enjoying some beautiful weather. I'm sorry you had to go through that.
Yes, thank you. Very, very difficult. Yeah. Look, hey, the Mets won 101 games in a normal year or a pre-this playoff format year. They'd actually play the Braves one more time to decide the division. But, hard to complain, considering I didn't have to see any of the series in Atlanta over the weekend. But, you know, it would have been nice if they just won one game. That's all it needed to be.
I mean, I'll take it a step further. I think it is won one game against the Cubs 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's even easier than beating the Braves is having the Braves series mean nothing because you didn't get swept by the Cubs in September. But, you know, que sera, sera. We will get through this, I'm sure. But, you know, let's just briefly look back on the season in general. We're going to have more time to reflect on the season as the postseason and offseason unroll before us. But, you know, if you had told me in April, that the Mets would have won the wild card, I would have thought, wow, that's the Cohen organization really turned the team around a little bit here. That's good. If you had told me in July that the team would have won the wild card, I thought, what the hell happened? They were in first place. It's a really strange season to sort of look back on in terms of the expectations changing throughout. And I feel like I've heard ball players say this my whole life, and I've always kind of thought it was bullshit. But I feel like if the Mets can really start to treat Friday as the start of a second season, of a new season, I feel much better about this team than if I'm trying to drag through it or drag with me all of the sort of baggage from the season. Do you kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's tough when they when they've won that many games, and I know they didn't come like roaring into the playoffs in mid to late September, but then in early October for that matter. But yeah, that's totally fair. I think the biggest concern really is just that Starling Marte is not anywhere near ready to return. That he's been a very important part of this team. And I think, I don't recall who it was, but somebody on the radio, whether it was Wayne Randazzo, Howie Rose, or Ed Coleman, somebody said that you got to think that if Marte hadn't had the broken finger and was there, that the Mets might have found that one win that would have clinched the division for them.
Right.
Over these last few weeks. So they've got enough depth there that they can obviously survive in his absence. But that's probably the one thing that concerns me the most, just because that one more very good bat and also like well-rounded player could come in handy against the Padres, who have good starting pitching this weekend.
Yes. Yeah. In an article that will already be live by the time you hear this, you're hearing this on Friday morning. Let me hear this on, if you read this on Thursday, I sort of took a look at the roster construction, and I basically say that Starling Marte solves all the Mets roster problems. That, like, you know, there's talk about you need Terrence Gore on the team because you need speed. Well, Marte has speed. You need Tyler Naquin on the roster because he's an outfielder. Starling Marte is an outfielder, right? Like, there's, Marte just solves a whole lot of issues for this team. With his health and the fact that he isn't there really does make the playoff roster a strange one to construct. It's a real shame, and you hope that he's maybe back for the next series if there is a next series, but that's also, I mean, then you're asking a guy who hasn't played in a game in a month to come back in a playoff race. That's a lot to ask somebody.
Yeah. There's no rehab game. You might be able to send him to St. Lucie and do some things, but talk about getting back up to speed, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's a little bit unfair to ask him to be that guy for the team. But that's where we are, I think. Do you have any strong feelings on who should be making the the roster at this point? I mean, to me, there's sort of like 20 or so pretty locked in people for it, but there's some people at the fringes. So I'm going to start with the bullpen for you. Is there anybody who you feel like is not one of the quote unquote locks for the bullpen that you think should be on the roster?
That is a good question. Let me look at the depth chart a little bit for a minute here.
Sure. Just to give you some context here, I had said that I feel that Ottavino, May, Lugo, and Rodriguez are guys you have to have, obviously, besides Diaz.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. There aren't too many relievers that I trust right now on this team, despite the fact that Edwin Diaz is outstanding, and I trust him very much. Just taking a quick look at, I mean, Trevor May, you know, pre-COVID absence and post, mostly has had good outings. Had one bad one in Oakland. But to me, he belongs, especially given the context of where this bullpen is at, you know.
Yeah.
So it's only 9 2/3 innings, but he finished the year in those 9 2/3 innings with a 1.86 ERA, lots of strikeouts, not too many walks, sort of the kind of stuff you'd expect to see from Trevor May. I get it if people are a little apprehensive if he gets into a really big spot, but that might just need to happen. But yeah, those guys I think are the right ones. And then beyond that, I mean, they used Trevor Williams. I wasn't overly emotional about it in either way, but they used Trevor Williams quite a bit in the season finale.
He's not making the
yesterday
roster. Yeah,
right. So he won't be in the mix on the wild card roster. I assume he will be if they advance to the NLDS.
Yes, he has to be, essentially, I think.
Yeah,
he's too valuable not to be.
Yeah.
Here's my question: do you roster both Carrasco and Walker on the
wild card
roster?
Yeah, if you're leaving Williams off, I think you have to.
You have to do both. I think you do too, but I've been debating that in my head.
Yeah, I mean, just in case you get an extra inning game, or you know, for whatever reason, somebody has a brief start. It's not just eating innings, and I know they've had their ups and downs, but both of those guys, I think, give you a legitimate chance to not burn your entire bullpen, and also maybe pitch well and you know, win the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's if you're looking at that. So if I'm saying take all five starters, then the relievers get you up to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. If you took the team as is, no Williams, but all five starters.
Uh-huh. And then Drew Smith, Michael Givens, David Peterson, Edwin Diaz, Ottavino, May, Lugo, and Rodriguez. That's 13.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how I would roll for this series.
You hope you don't have to use Smith, Givens, or Peterson.
Yeah.
But,
And hey, to his credit, I hope the more recent version of Joely Rodriguez is the guy who's there.
Yes.
In the playoffs.
I hope the most recent version of all these guys, like Smith, Givens, and Peterson, have all been pretty good lately, too.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, Rodriguez, similar to May, in really good ERA in his last 9 2/3 innings. Same number of innings. Let's just hope that's what holds up.
Right. Exactly. That's always the question, right? Now, in terms of the bench, right, just sort of a philosophical question for you here. You know, Francisco Alvarez played about 13 or 14 innings at catcher over the last 2 days. You have to just think of him as a DH for the postseason, though, right? You're not going to be having him catching in the postseason unless something really goes wrong.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And even though having seen him play some in the minors, I don't think he's a permanent DH only. I think he can catch, but asking to catch like a game that matters for the first time in the playoffs is a lot.
I mean, I just think of it in terms of, you know, I think when he was pitching yesterday, he was catching guys he has caught in the minors before for the most part.
Right.
But you're not going to put him out there with Bassett, who has six pitches, or with Scherzer, who would throw a ball through his helmet if he fucked up a sign or something, you know? So you just can't do that to the kid.
Yeah, yeah. And I think generally I don't worry too much about doing things too soon or whatever. But, if there were any defensive miscues in a playoff game and they cost the Mets anything, everybody would write him off as like he can't catch for the rest of his career, you know? Obviously, if you're in a situation, if you do carry three catchers with McCann, Nito, and him, if you're in a situation where somebody gets hurt and he's got to get back there, that's a hell of a lot better than an emergency catcher.
Absolutely, yes.
Type situation. I mean, as much as I'd love to see what like Luis Guillorme could do back there,
right? Not in the playoffs.
I'd rather have him out in the field at one of the positions that we know he excels at.
Yes.
So yeah, it's. Yeah, I'm fine with leaving Ruff off the roster in favor of Alvarez. I mean,
I don't know if you saw the stat that got someone tweeted out last night, which is insane, but apparently true. I did not fact check it, so this is just from something that our friend Linda Cerevich retweeted. But it appears that as a Met, Darren Ruff had more WAR from his one pitching appearance than he did from his hitting.
Yeah, that checks out.
Which is just the craziest thing you could say. But you know, it's just insane. It's just I think Darren Ruff's a much better player than the player he was for the end of the season with the Mets. 100% a better player than he is. However, I just don't know if you can roll that dice in the playoffs. Especially when you have Alvarez out there who has already done more as a Met offensively than Ruff did, or has done as much at least, in a much, much more limited span. I don't know.
I mean, look, we're talking about somebody who's going to be hitting near the bottom of the lineup anyway.
Right.
So I guess it's a relatively good problem to have, right?
Yes. Do you want Terrence Gore on the roster?
Yeah, I think so. As things are currently constructed, I think I'd have him there.
Do you want Tyler Naquin on the roster?
Yeah. So on my hypothetical roster here, I've got 13 pitchers, which means I have to cut somebody from the current bench. Vientos has got to leave off to me.
I agree.
So yeah, I'd go Gore, Naquin, Alvarez, McCann. I know there's not a ton of flexibility there, infield wise, you know, but
yeah.
Hey, Marcana can play third base. We learned this year,
right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and you would think like the way I try to think about these things is, okay, if an outfielder went down, if Nimmo goes down, Gore or Naquin can play the outfield. So you have an extra outfielder on your roster. If, God forbid, Lindor goes down, Guillorme can slide over there, and McNeil can come in and play second. Like there's enough flexibility there where at every sort of segment of the field, you know, there's a catcher on the roster, there's an infielder on the roster, there's an outfielder on the roster. For a three-game series, I think that's really all you need.
Right. Yeah, no, and I think the versatility of McNeil and Guillorme is huge.
Yes. Yeah, that is what essentially saves the roster for the series. So,
yeah.
I agree. We also know Max Scherzer is starting game one. Is that the right call in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally reasonable to do that. I think what they decide to do with game two is where you can get into whether or not they're playing it right. I love Jacob deGrom, but objectively, Scherzer has been their best starting pitcher this year. Starting him in the first game of the playoffs, you know, I can't really get upset about that. And then the thing that everybody's already debating and will continue to debate probably until there's a result of the game tomorrow night and a decision on Saturday is whether you go with Bassett or DeGrom based on whether you win or lose, you know. Right. So do you just go for it all and use DeGrom in the game two, or if you win, go with Bassett and then hope you have a fully rested DeGrom to start the NLDS against the Dodgers. So
I think that's basically how I feel. I feel like, you know, if there's a way that you can survive game two with Bassett, and look, Bassett is a very good pitcher. I know he did not have a great game against the Braves, and I know that he doesn't always have an out pitch, which is a problem, but I think that Bassett against the Padres should be okay. Should, I'm putting that in italics and quotes and however else you can designate uncertainty in that statement, but I think Bassett should be okay in that spot, and that way you have a fully rested DeGrom for game one of the division series, and you have, I think at that point, Scherzer on regular rest for game two, and then you have things lined up the way you want to. But I totally understand. I would 100% understand if someone feels like you can't risk that, and maybe you have to just go with your two best pitchers, you know, one and two. I totally understand that too. It's a tough call. It really is. But I think the Mets are in a good position here because they have these options, and they have the options without that. To do these things won't require anyone going on short rest for the wild card series, which I was a little bit afraid of initially. Especially if they did the dumb thing of throwing DeGrom yesterday, which I think Buck would have done that if there was a chance they could have won the division yesterday, which, you know, is a thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I hope you're all enjoying the jackhammering sounds that are now happening outside.
How do you know Chris is recording from the Bronx?
So, yeah. But yeah, just win tomorrow night, and then I don't know. I'm not gonna get too upset if they win tomorrow night. Whatever they decide to do on Saturday in terms of the starter is not gonna make me lose any sleep, unless they lose the game, and you know, then things get dicey. Also, I have a wedding on Sunday to attend, so if the Mets could please just win in two. That would make things a lot easier. I'd really rather not have to DVR a full Mets game, a Mets playoff game, an elimination game, and then basically throw my phone in
into the ocean.
Well, no, I don't want to do that. We don't. But throw it in like a safe.
Well, let me see. What time is the wild card game on Sunday?
Well, it depends. So if everybody's playing, the Mets and Padres have a 7:37 start again.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But there's some scenario where if one of the series is over, then they move up to 4:00. But if both of the other series are over, they stay at 7:37, or if all three, it's in flux. So let's just say just win it in two.
Yeah, just win it in two. That makes everyone's life a lot easier.
Yeah. Save a starting pitcher. Save a lot of stress for Mets fans.
Yeah.
And you know, just accommodate my personal plans for the weekend. That's really it.
Which is obviously the most important thing.
Yes.
All right, Chris, you probably have a whole bunch of good music recommendations having just come back from Desert Days. So what is your music pick for this week?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start with a familiar band. Recommended one other album of theirs in the past, but they're a band that we are seeing. They're going on indefinite hiatus, and we're seeing them one last time in Brooklyn tonight. Kikugaku Moyo, and I'm going to go back to the album that was what really first got us into them, which was Forest of Lost Children. They're the best. Their set at Desert Days was really cool. They they just played fewer songs and did really long versions of them and like jammed all of them out, which I think was a nice way of doing like a special set for there.
Mm-hmm.
And man, they had everybody in the palm of their hand. So that was really great. And this record was, you know, I think the one that really caught people's attention. So yeah, Forest of Lost Children, Kodama, the second track is right up there as maybe my favorite song that they've ever recorded. And I do hope that the indefinite part of that hiatus is, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years, something like that before they decide, hey, let's get back out there and play some of these songs again. But if it is it, and if tonight is the last show, the way that they're framing it right now, then really excited to see them one last time.
Yeah, enjoy that. That's always a special thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I last Friday was one of the best days of music releases we've had in a while. I have so far listened to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 records that were released that day. I still have at least 3 more, and all 5 of them have been pretty good, like from ranging from pretty good to very good. But I'm going to recommend what has been, to my estimation, the best of them so far, which is a band from Philadelphia called Second Grade. They put out a record a couple of years ago that I really, really liked, and I was eagerly anticipating this new one, and it did not disappoint. It is called Easy Listening. They are a like a straight up power pop band, just melodies and hooks that, you know, every song just sounds like a hit from the 70s, like a Badfinger or a Rock Pile, Elvis Costello hit, like just these really, really melodic, catchy, short songs. Their last record had something like 30 songs on it because each song was like 90 seconds long. This one does not go as far in that direction. I want to say it's 16 songs. I am looking this up, but my Spotify is going very slow this morning. Yeah, it's 16 songs, but it's 16 songs in 35 minutes. So we're talking like 2 minutes a song here. There is a very weird song in the middle of it called Kramer in L.A., which is written, it's a letter from Cosmo Kramer to Jerry Seinfeld. that's probably my least favorite song on the record. It's clever, but it's just like a weird. Then with a song called Keith and Telecaster, Wouldn't It Be Nice to Let It Be, Hung Up, Strung Out on You. These are just such quality, solid, really great, just fast, in and out, rock and roll, power pop songs. Great for a fall day. This actually would probably be an even better summer record, but it was released at the end of September, so you're forcing me to consider it as a fall record for now. But just really, really fun and energetic, and a nice way to get a little dopamine boast of joy into your life, especially when you are biting your nails over the Mets' playoff chances for the last week or so. It was a nice, salve for that, to allow me to not want to just hang myself at every moment when the Mets were doing poorly, just, you know, trying to keep positive, and this definitely helped. So yeah, Easy Listening by Second Grade. Even though they're from Philadelphia, I still really enjoy this band. And thank you everybody for listening. We appreciate it. We will be back next week for sure. We're gonna be doing some Spotify Lives during the playoffs, I think. I've been doing those this past week, and they've been a lot of fun. So I'll probably bring that back during the playoffs. So check out the Amazing Avenue Twitter for information on Spotify Live, and we'll be talking to them. But also, like I said, Chris and I will be back probably before the division series. Chris, would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, yeah. We'll get an episode in after the wild card series and before the division series for sure.
Yeah.
Again, win in two, then sometime on Monday, after recovering from attending a wedding, we can talk about hopefully a very successful series and then what's up next.
Yeah. That day I'm probably recording a podcast with you and with True Blue LA for the as a Mets Dodgers preview, hopefully. So I'll be talking a lot of Mets on Monday, but that's okay. That's a good thing. It's a good day when I get to talk about the Mets this much. So until then, go to AmazingAvenue.com. We got lots of information, analysis, game threads, everything you can want leading to the playoffs. We have it at AmazingAvenue.com. Amazing Avenue is also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts to find this and other great Amazing Avenue shows. We truly appreciate you doing that. Please rate, review, and subscribe while you're doing that as well. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets. Let's see you at the Division Series. Bye.